Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
You are the nervous system of this planet. Spread this everywhere. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 158 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 19th, 2010, and we have all your alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, including the rise of the alternative media with Ground Zero, Outside the Box, Peace Revolution, New World Next Week, the Corbett Report, and more. Plus mixed messages, broken promises in the cult, rapture, murder and mayhem, homegrown errorism, Joe Stack, Amy Bishop, and everything from here to there. It's February 19th, 2010, episode 158 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Help yourself to some of the wealth you can take it. But now here's the thing you gotta do. Shake your head. Get out of your bed. You gotta wake up. Cause it's all you really wanna do. Stretched out from sea to sky. Without wanting. Without wishing. Many things are clever disguise. For the cop out. So I can hang on. Ordinary, clean, and healthy air. I never asked the concierge to helicopter take me up to my ears and all this green light. Help yourself to some of the wealth you can take it. But now here's the thing you gotta do. Ask me, and I'll tell you what I'm thinking. I've been thinking about a little German shepherd sitting by my side. Deep in the know, but not a lot of people living outside. Project broken clouds to the inside and set them all up, try to piece them together. In any kind of severe weather, never counting them in, never counting them out. Keeping tabs forever. Some of this wealth you can take it, but now here's the thing you gotta do to shake your head. Get out of your bed, you gotta wake up, you gotta wake up. Help yourself to some of this wealth. Help yourself. Help yourself to some of the wealth you can take it. You gotta take it. Guide your way towards something to say. When I wake up, when you wake up together on a fast track, blowing a kiss back to yesterday. Shake your head, get out of your bed. You gotta wake up, it's all you really want. Gotta shake your head, get out of your bed. You must wake up, it's all you really need to do. Shake your head.
Sloan, that's their latest single, Get Out of Bed. You gotta wake up. And welcome to episode 158 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 19th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. With a website for the last nearly 5 years dedicated to alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And the radio show going on 4 years. Sloan, the band we heard at the top there, Get Out of Bed, one of my favorite bands. I got to see them again, actually, for the fifth time at probably the best club here in Portland, Oregon, Doug Fir Lounge. I've been a fan of theirs since I saw their first video on 120 Minutes back in 92, and I went out and bought the tape from Camelot Music. And they've always just been one of my favorite little indie bands that could. So I've interviewed them for my college radio station in the past, and like I said, seen them several times. Really cool power pop band. They all write, they all play instruments, trade around, very Beatly, Cheap Trick, and better. So I've got to meet them. Got a lot of different things autographed from them through the years. And maybe the connection I'm making to the main topic at hand for this episode 158 of MediaMonarchy.com is not hating the media, but becoming the media. So if you would have told 16-year-old me that I'd be hanging out with Sloan again, I'd be pretty stoked. And it is possible to become the media and to get involved. Wake up and get out of bed. So hopefully you have, and welcome to wherever you are in the world, my friends. This transmission originates, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time here in the People's Republic of Oregon. Of course, huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast right now. It's 11 a.m. Mountain Time over in Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. RevereRadio.net, 1 p.m. on the East Coast, on the worldwide home of free speech. And all the other affiliates, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 104.1 Berkeley Liberation Radio.net, 90.7 in Kisilov, Alaska, thanks to OneSkyRadio.com, KWMD, PhantomRadio.org in Boulder, Colorado, 93.9. 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, thanks to Ground Zero Radio on stickam.com. And of course, my man Glenn at cascadiapublicradio.org and Jeff at radio23.org. So I thank you for returning, and I welcome you if you are new. This is Alternative News. I was the music director at an indie rock station back east for a long time. I've now transferred that into my own little miniature media monarchy kingdom. And over the years have been working to make more and more connections. To make meaningful connections with like-minded folks. To make positive actions in spreading information and art and media. I'm kind of the data miner. I collect mass amounts of info and put it into a great context for you on MediaMonarchy.com. And then it's so fantastic then to see those stories and those ideas spreading into some of my other favorite shows and the folks out there in the alternative media world. So that's what we're going to go over for the first good chunk of this jam-packed episode 158. I, of course, should mention you can always make contact on facebook.com/MediaMonarchy, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Those are most of the ways the monarchy kingdom spreads out. We, of course, always like to look at Google News while we're live in the studio. I can't catch everything, but I try and catch a lot. So, of course, what's going on in the world right now? What's the most important thing right now? Tiger Woods apologizes. Now, I was chatting, and you can as well, over on ZeroPointRadio.com in the chat room, as we were talking about the celebrity media distraction circus, we came up with a headline. Corporate mainstream media can't see the forest for the woods. That's right, you heard it here first on MediaMonarchy.com. Go ahead, use it. We, of course, have all the updates of something we're going to get into much later in the episode, and that is, of course, the curious case of Joe Stack. The latest rearing of the ugly head of homegrown errorism, as we've tracked, I think, pretty well here on the show over the last couple years. Kind of telling you what's going to happen when the two phony political parties switch back and forth between puppet Bush and puppet Obama. We'll go from the enemy being over there to the enemy being here, just like it was in the 90s with Clinton and McVeigh's and Ruby Ridge's and violent anti-government militias and all the other things that are all painted up to be something perhaps that they're not, or that have been hijacked or misdirected. All up on the world stage. So that's what's going on, briefly. Of course, not even briefly. There's a military crash over West Virginia. There's more on the Tea Party, Ron Paul, Sarah Palin meme that's growing disgustingly large. There was a coup in Niger. And so much more. But what we're going to do, my friends, is start on MediaMonarchy.com with an amazing opportunity that I got last Sunday here in Portland, Oregon. I told you and announced and tried to spread the word to you that my man Clyde Lewis, formerly of the Ground Zero Lounge that was here at Dante's in Portland, tons of those videos online. He got picked up by 101.1 FM KUFO here in Portland, Oregon, to do Ground Zero Sunday nights, 10 to midnight. He invited myself and Alex Ansari of Outside the Box on to Ground Zero on KUFO Sunday night. A huge InfoWar breakthrough, I think, and it was also a huge blast, and a huge thanks to Clyde Lewis and Alex Ansari and the folks at KUFO. So, this is the first bit of the rise of at least my growing, hopefully helpful involvement in an alternative media. So I was live on KUFO in Portland Sunday night to discuss the police state. Is it coming or is it already here? So again, Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, alexansari.com, A-N-S-A-R-Y, and of course, zeropointradio.com for helping to get this incredible discussion out there. Now, something we're going to address a couple of times in this episode 158 is getting involved in helping to make and support alternative media. You can hit up the store on ZeroPointRadio.com, the Ground Zero Total Recall store, and buy all the episodes that Clyde Lewis has done on KUFO for the last several weeks. They're a buck a piece. You can't beat that. Would you rather give a buck to growing alternative media or another buck down the iTunes bottomless 10 billionth pit? So I implore you to, as we will repeatedly do, to support and donate to the alternative media. So get those files on ZeroPointRadio.com. We also thank Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org. So we reference that myself, Clyde Lewis, and Alex Ansari were discussing the police state, asking, is it on its way or is it already here? This was all based on a new article from Clyde Lewis on GroundZeroMedia.org called My First Police State. On February 3rd, 2010, Dennis Blair, director of President Obama's National Intelligence, told the House Intelligence Committee that it was now, quote, defined policy, end quote, that the U.S. government can murder its own citizens. This execution would be based solely on assumption that the citizen is a threat to national security. This would be carried out with no arrest or trial or conviction, just execution on suspicion only. Plain and simple, the police state has now advanced to the policies that are similar to Stalin's Russia. The executive branch has assumed the right to murder Americans who it deems a threat. And we have more on the just mainline reporting of this from Dennis Blair and all the other criminal cronies. Washington Post and CNN linked up. Now, they allegedly won't kill you on American soil, but take a step out of the United States and the intelligence community can wipe you out if they see you as a threat to the country. Where does it end, really? The idea that you can be killed anywhere by your own government demonstrates the grandeur of the police state and how it goes unchallenged by Americans who see it as a necessary evil against terrorism. The policies of overseas assassinations being carried over to the states is probably not a far reach. Americans have already been killed for their beliefs, from the incidents at the aforementioned Waco to Ruby Ridge to the Black Panthers. A dark side to police state activity exists and persists. To execute anyone without a trial takes away their constitutional right of due process. This is what goes on during a police state. If this is your first one, we welcome you.
First of all, let's bring my guests on. Let's bring Alex Ansari on, and let's bring James Evan Pilato on. Go ahead and say hello to everybody out there. James, first, welcome to the show.
Clyde, thanks so much for having us on, man. I appreciate it.
And Alex, you go ahead and say hello.
Yeah, thank you very much, Clyde. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you. And I don't think ever in the history of radio have there been, you know, I do what I do, but you guys are, you know, you, of course, James, Media Monarchy. Tell a little bit about what Media Monarchy does. It sifts through the news, basically, right?
I basically do the data mining, and I try and sift through the news. So on MediaMonarchy.com, and I've been doing the website for almost 5 years, I troll through all the news and put things together, and I think we've said before that people say that the mainstream media is all lies.
Right.
But it's not all lies, they just don't give you the context or the subtext. And what I try and do with the site is not only give you a story, but also try and give you the background and sort of the supplemental contextual link to say, here's why this is an important story. And I think that's what sets the site apart from others.
What's really fascinating is James Evan Pilato, I've read his website. I read it religiously. And I also do news for a radio station here in town. Ground Zero is not the only thing I do. I do also news reporting. Mm-hmm. I did a report on a situation at PSU, Portland yes. State University, with Professor John Hall accusing a student of being an FBI agent. Now, we, as a newsroom, did not know the background story. Now, James, tell us a little bit about that. And there are a lot of PSU students, I think, that listen to this show. In fact, we've got a lot of college students who listen to this show.
Okay.
Why is this story bigger than what we've heard? I mean, we heard that Hall could not teach. We heard that, you know, that allegedly it was this FBI informant that was at his school.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We'll break it down for folks. And essentially, the two main parties aren't saying anything other than through their lawyers now. But we had a situation a few weeks ago where a Portland professor accused a student of being an FBI informant and of also trying to radicalize his classmates, telling them about Molotov cocktails and how to get guns and just how to be violent in general. And this story, why it's not just a Portland story, is that I think what goes along with this, and it was recently reported on Democracy Now, they had an anthropologist on to talk about the Central Intelligence Agency has set up basically fronts, and not fronts in the black ops sense, but real setups at 22 American universities.
Right.
So this isn't just a Portland story. So I caught it because, you know, we're here, and it's much more apparent. I've talked to folks, you know, second and third hand connected to the situation.
This is where the police state begins, because the CIA has become the black op or the shadow government for this government that has created these cell structures within colleges and these cell structures within communities and in churches and places like that. They don't answer to Congress. They don't answer for their budgets. They don't answer to anything. So what you're seeing is this spying infiltration going on, not just in Portland, Oregon, but John Hall, he made the accusation. Both sides are saying that the FBI isn't involved, but you say that maybe there's something else going on behind the scenes with this guy?
In the moment, in this classroom where this confrontation happened a few weeks ago, the student accused a guy whose name is supposedly Zachary Bucharest, and we're getting stuff, you know, from the PSU newspaper and from the Oregonian. He stood up and said, well, some of the things he said about my military background are true.
And he was with the Israeli military, wasn't
he? And those were the accusations, that he was an IDF soldier.
Right.
So if he gets up and says, well, some of the things about my military background are true, but the things about me being an FBI provocateur aren't, so is he essentially admitting that, yes, he was an Israeli soldier? I don't know.
Well, see, that's the thing. What's most interesting is that there is, and that's why conspiracy theory, people want to try and debunk conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory is the catch-all now for people investigating stories. We get one story, and then we get another story that's the shadow story. No one wants to buy the shadow story. And they're afraid that, they're afraid that if they indulge in it, they're going to be called cranks or cracks.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that a crank last week, Freeman, and myself, both said that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's announcement will be, oh, by the way, we've got nukes. And we pointed out all the symbolism and everything else, and you know, we thought that they were going to drop it on us. We thought, yeah, this is going to happen because they're going to say punch. But no, I mean, it was a punch. But it wasn't the punch we were looking for. However, for me, I think it's kind of scary that this is going on. But see, that was all some conspiracy theory before saying, well, they've got the bomb. They've had it for a while. They're finally going to tell us, but they're going to shoot up some worms and some turtles up into space before, you know, they tell the truth. But, you know, putting the Quran at the bottom of a rocket called the Smurg, which is a phoenix that destroys the Earth, can't tell me that wasn't symbolic of something. And so when a guy says, oh, by the way, you're my student, I think you're an FBI informant, he could be half-baked, go off half-cocked, could be totally out of his mind, or he could be onto something. Maybe the details are incorrect, but something is there. And so what you're trying to tell me is that he did have a background in some military.
In some kind of military background. And again, some of the folks I've talked to, you know, second, third hand connected to the situation, seem to be that other students were aware of this guy talking about weapons and things.
So we have actually a spy that's in a college, or we have someone that's allegedly a spy or reportedly a spy in a college. This guy kind of rats him out, and immediately we have this huge incident where the college is investigating. And that's interesting because of what I wrote. If you go to groundzeromedia.org, groundzeromedia.org, I just wrote an article that's posted up called My First Police State. And what it's about is for people who don't know what a police state is, it's not really all that remedial, but it certainly points some things out about what is a police state. And one of the major things to demonstrate to you that there's a police state is infiltration of colleges, spies in colleges, CIA operatives in colleges. And there are cops there all the time, I'm sure. But no, we're talking about big, you know, alphabet agencies who don't answer to anyone, basically setting up in college campuses around the country spying. Now, Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, this guy has been screaming and yelling from the rafters about these things going on his show, on his television show. Yeah, does it surprise you at all that we're hearing about this now?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all that we're hearing about this now. In fact, we're hearing about stories like this literally nationwide, the use of agent provocateurs to truly destabilize any peaceful resistance to the elite, the New World Order, whatever term we use to describe this group. They're out there, and they got a lot of money, taxpayer funds.
And so we're paying for this spy ring. We're
absolutely.
For the spying.
We're funding the shackles on our wrists and ankles.
Yeah, and so you take a look at this, and you know, you say to yourself, am I going out of my mind, or would you say the police state's here now?
Yeah, the police state's here now, and to a certain degree, we're already under martial law, and the invasion is already underway. And if we take a look at what NORTHCOM's involved in, preparations for martial law in the event of civil unrest, which the government is planning for, because it's only a matter of time before the economy crashes, you know, what we're doing here, Clyde, is reporting the writing that's on the wall, the stuff that few people have the guts to talk about because it scares them.
That's just a few brief moments from the awesome Portland 3 appearing on KUFO 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, blasting out 50 plus thousand watts to the Portland metro area and beyond. I implore you to get that episode and to support Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, and buy the shows at zeropointradio.com. Thanks to my man Alex Ansary of Outside the Box. And I know that I haven't done as well as I have done in the past on MediaMonarchy.com of always trying to post up all the recent episodes from Alex Ansary and Clyde Lewis. So I've gotten behind on the TV shows that Alex still does here on Portland Community Media. Does the TV show. He has the radio show on Oracle. We're all trying to branch out and grow grassroots connections. So that's the first bit of all the latest salvos in the information war. Hopefully I'll get to go on KUFO again sometime. We'll see what the ratings look like when they come in to the big station. But you gotta give it to KUFO for putting it on the air. Now, my friends, let's jump to something that ties in with a lot of what we're talking about and what we're going to talk about. PeaceRevolution.org. There is a new documentary film called 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. Now, the audio of this documentary is available as the third episode of PeaceRevolution.org. If you'll recall, the previous two episodes we've noted on MediaMonarchy.com. PeaceRevolution.org is the new enterprise and podcast from Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com and 9/11 Synchronicity. PeaceRevolution.org is a bold new direction that is essentially about educating ourselves to live instead of amusing ourselves to death. Vancouver documentary filmmaker Paul Verge brings us a revealing interview which expresses the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the recent economic decline. How it was legislated into existence, defended by corporate media and political watchdogs, and allowed to drain America of nearly $200 trillion through a series of Ponzi schemes which could have been exposed years earlier, but weren't. Officially titled 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, this interview also includes solutions, documents, and references, and asks only that you consider the information, think for yourself, and communicate with others in order to achieve a higher level of awareness. Let's listen to the intro of 2020 Hindsight from PeaceRevolution.org.
Named I don't have them all at my command.
Well, how can you propose to solve the problems of the company that you're now running if you don't know the names of the people who caused that problem?
Because there are great people running AIG.
White-collar crime seems to have become part of our status quo. As new scandals sprout to the surface almost daily, the constant confusion creates a citizenry desensitized to corporate crime. And most people can't even fathom the frauds, let alone resolve the cognitive dissonance created by the frauds.
I'm just not going to do that, sir, because that will provide, that could be a list of people that we could do something. Individuals wanting damage to them could do that.
Well, listen, same people could now be working right now, today, at Citibank. Is it more important to protect them, the ones who caused the $100 billion loss, or protect us? Which is more important to you right now?
The important thing is to protect both. I'm just not going to sit here and give it to you until I understand what the implications are.
Can I count on you to give us that list? Yes or no?
I do not know. I will consult with our general counsel and decide what the appropriate course of action is.
Not the answer I was hoping for, but my time is up.
The criminals have become accustomed to refusing congressional inquiries and expert at bending and bribing our representatives to their will, now with the approval of the Supreme Court. But that's only because we, the people, have been kept in the dark as to how this all perpetuates. Tonight, we shed some light by presenting a story censored by the establishment media and relevant to anyone who uses money, plans for the future, and is aware enough to listen and consider the views expressed by our guest, a Wall Street whistleblower whose experiences illustrate how the legislation implemented by Congress, which should have been a protective measure against fraud, actually favored rogue financial services companies and was used as a weapon of fraud against the people. And today, many trillions of dollars are still unaccounted for. We begin with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, the law created as a strategic solution to reduce white-collar crime and to address a number of major corporate and accounting scandals, including those infecting Enron, Tyco International, WorldCom, and many others. This is an interview which demonstrates the gross negligence of the regulatory agencies, courts, and media outlets, whose actions indicate that it's more important to protect the frauds and ensure the rights of rogue corporations than to serve your interests and preserve the public trust. This is also the story of a corporate account executive who blew the whistle under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, who warned the SEC in 2003, and who was subsequently retaliated against, terminated, and blacklisted, whereupon he brought a multi-billion dollar corporation into court, leveraging the alleged protections granted to whistleblowers under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Among his clients were AIG, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, Tyco International, WorldCom, Northrop Grumman, and DynCorp, among other government contractors and notorious global financial institutions. And what he discovered was a backdoor in the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance software which he was tasked to sell these companies, and that the law was being employed by executives to further obscure frauds from public scrutiny. After reading more than 1,000 pages of court transcripts related to this case, Vancouver-based documentary filmmaker Paul Verge flew to Connecticut to interview this whistleblower and shed some much-needed light on these events. The result is what follows, an enlightening and empowering perspective which dampens confusion and stimulates understanding. This interview was conducted on December 10th, 2009, and is entitled 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line.
That, my friends, is just merely the intro to 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. The entire audio-only track from 2020 Hindsight was released as Episode 3 from peacerevolution.org. What this connects to and what this ties into, and this is the larger scheme and meme of what we're talking about, making real connections. This is going to be released as a unique DVD-ROM that's going to have that full feature, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, with the bonus feature, one, Project Constellation. And that was Richard Andrew Grove's first message in a bottle to the world about those financial misdealings that we just heard from Lisa Arbacheski in the intro to 2020 Hindsight. It also contains recent episodes of
the aforementioned Peace Revolution podcast, like the Million Dollar Education. That, again, what I say is the... it's all about teaching you how to fish. Educating ourselves to live. Now, my pledge here, and now, because of 2020 hindsight, and the way that Divergent Films, and PeaceRevolution.org, and TragedyAndHope.com are releasing this DVD, the video is all up on YouTube, and I'm going to have all that coming soon on MediaMonarchy.com. However, the actual DVD that has all those aforementioned menus, it's in super high quality. The documentation that's cited is fully legible. You can pause it and you can see and read the documentation, making it even an even more effective tool. So it's not a little pixely document you can't read or verify. If you want a DVD of 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, all you got to do is donate $10 to any one of the following independent media sites, such as Maria.net, The Maria Heller Show, M-E-R-I-A.net, Jan Irvin and GnosticMedia.com, Jack Blood at DeadlineLive.info, myself, James Evan Pilato at MediaMonarchy.com, and James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. And our quote at the beginning is what I'll repeat for you now, and this is the call out for you to don't hate the media, become the media. You are the nervous system of this planet. Spread this everywhere. Now, my pledge that I referenced, I've always meant to set up a bank account for Media Monarchy, and I've never done it. And PayPal sketches me out. So there's no way I was going to connect that to my personal finances. When I finish this show today, episode 158, I'm going to go to the credit union that's just down the road and open up an account for Media Monarchy. You can hopefully donate $10 or anything you want to MediaMonarchy.com or CorbettReport.com or PeaceRevolution.org or ZeroPointRadio.com or Maria.net, GnosticMedia.com, DeadlineLive.info. But my pledge is to get a donation button for MediaMonarchy.com. So I'm going to do that when this show finishes at noon here on February 19th, 2010 in Portland, Oregon. That is my pledge to you. James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Huge, huge appreciation and thanks and props to Lisa Arbacheski, Richard Andrew Grove, Paul Verge for making 2020 Hindsight happen. So more on that as it develops. We now move to the next related piece of the rise of the alternative media. And my thankful, modest things that I can add to all the folks out there. Recently, myself and Richard Grove of PeaceRevolution.org and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com had a three-way conversation that we're calling Signal to Noise, a three-way conversation on the media and the message. In this two-plus-hour discussion, we break down the media, its use as a tool for misdirection by the oligarchical elite, and how we can work together to create and support a genuine grassroots alternative media. This file has been doubled up and put out there. James Corbett has it up on CorbettReport.com under the title Signal to Noise. I re-uploaded it to my archive and radioforall.net to redouble the efforts to try and spread this everywhere. Here's an amazing, just brief extraction from Signal to Noise.
Well, when I was preparing for this conversation this morning, I thought, what would be a conversation about alternative media if you don't bring up Marshall McLuhan and his laws of media? So I went over to my bookshelf and I found the book, and I had a couple pages marked in there. And one of the pages marked was a quote about the use of the trivium in Aristotle and Plato. And I guess when I read it years ago, I had no context for it, so I didn't understand what I was reading, but I marked that page. And in reviewing this book this morning, I thought, wow, I really just need to sit down and reread this whole book in order to be able to explain it. So I'm going to give you a brief summary, but we'll do a future show where we can talk about Marshall McLuhan and what he observed and how those laws hold up, because the four laws really equate to four dimensions. And how he would have you set this up is you would draw this out in what's called a tetrad on a piece of paper. Tetrad meaning four. So you have these four spots like an X. So at the four points of the X, you'd have these different spots. And then what's in between is the media that's created by these four dimensions. So much the same as we have three-dimensional space plus time, he's equating media to this thing that takes up time and space and has four dimensions. And the four different categories are set up as questions. So the first question would be, what does the medium enhance? So what is it doing? The second question is, what does the medium make obsolete? So by doing this, what now doesn't exist? By having the post office or by having the telegraph, what goes out of business, like the Pony Express? The third question is, what does the medium retrieve that had been obsolesced earlier? The idea being form is out of function and the function is out of necessity. What is the thing that's being revived that made this medium or this piece of media necessary in the first place? And where did that show up earlier in history? And the fourth question is, what does the medium flip into when pushed to extremes? So, for example, if you take what any one of us are doing and we tried to do it to the extreme, that would involve trying to grow our audience to immense sizes by using advertising and search engine optimization and all sorts of things that would involve a very corporate, business-like, profiteering type of mentality, thereby taking it to the extreme makes it the opposite polarity of what we originally intended as low-key, fear-free, seeking understanding, seeking certainty, seeking to better communicate with each other, understand, and survive. So those are the four laws of media.
That's right. And since they're posed as four questions, it kind of makes sense to try to apply that, say, to the new medium of the internet. So if you guys are game, why don't we attempt that right now? We have the first question is, what does the medium enhance? So thinking about the internet, what would you guys say about that? What does the internet enhance in our society?
It enhances our ability and likelihood to actually go search for information and learn something new as part of our observation. We come up with questions. The internet allows us to quickly start to satiate those questions by finding some stubs of information, which could then lead us to the library to find some books or to, you know, go and interview some people and to pull this information together. And so it stimulates the learning activity that needs to take place to get ourselves out of the mess we find ourselves in today.
I have to say, when I started MediaMonarchy.com, which I've been doing for, you know, almost 5 years, which that kind of blows my mind, I wonder sometimes, what did I do on the internet before I was doing a news blog? And when I think of it, I was mostly watching silly videos or trying to download free things and was using it just as almost as like a television where, oh, let's see what good is on, you know, what's funny that's on today. But doing the website, again, has now kind of opened up this, you know, amazing world. And all this information is now available. So it enhances my curiosity about the world. I can think, we used to go to the library after school sometimes, but it was never to actually get it. But it was just a place where we could kind of hang out and they didn't pester us away. I think now I need to go back to the library, and the internet, I think, enhances my, you know, my natural curiosity. But it's peaked and it's satiated and it builds and grows and things get answered and more questions get posed, and it constantly keeps me rolling forward, I think.
Very interesting. Well, how about number two? What does the medium make obsolete?
Rich, go ahead. Let me...
Thanks for the hot potato, buddy. All right, so here's how it works. The internet opens up and enhances and gives you access to all sorts of things that let you go find things that you never would have had access for. There are plenty of books at local libraries, local law libraries, that I never would have had an interest or knowledge to go to that library and find that book without the internet. So at the same time it's closing things off, we can be mindful of that and make sure that we keep having human interactions with other human beings. On the other hand, we can use the positive side of it to our advantage all the time. So it's just being wary that there's two edges and knowing how to use both edges of the sword.
Well, and I think I have too, if I can throw back in. I've asked people if they think that perhaps things like Facebook and social networks, have they killed the high school reunion? And the other one I would say, and I see it literally here in the city, it was amazing when I saw it, Blockbuster videos going out of business because a new idea done, you know, better with something like Netflix and probably again all the just sort of online delivery systems that we're going to see. But I really enjoy my Netflix and I won't shed a tear to see something like Blockbuster go away.
Well, along those lines, I have a sort of a different take on it than I guess maybe either of you, but to my mind, the internet is really making all other previous forms of media obsolete. And I don't mean that necessarily in the sense that they are going to disappear from the earth forever, but it seems to me that it's already making newspapers obsolete, and newspapers are already a failed business model that's about to collapse, and I don't think there's anything that's going to bring them back from the brink. And now they're, of course, talking about charging for access to their internet websites, so that's their new idea for generating revenue, which I think is also going to fail. But to me, the newspaper is already becoming obsolete. Radio is, I think, I could definitely see how podcasting will eventually replace it as a method for getting audio material out to the masses. And television, it's just a matter of time until video becomes widely available on the internet. I think we're really going through a process where, and eventually books as well, it's already even starting, I think. The maybe even the written word itself, as visual and audio media become easier to download and easier to transfer in large chunks, we will start to lose that print culture, which we had briefly regained, and maybe that's touching on question number three, what does the medium retrieve that had been obsolesced earlier. I think as people had been conditioned to decades of radio and TV, they'd been getting less and less used to the written and printed word. That was briefly revived and retrieved with the early internet, which was so heavily text-based, but is now being replaced as the internet becomes more audio and visual. But then on point number three, something else that the medium has retrieved that had been obsolesced earlier, I take almost an opposite stance on that the internet is reviving human interaction, but in a different way. Because I think we've for decades have been conditioned to sit in our living rooms and watch TV and not even talk to our members of our own family, let alone people in the outside world. And the internet has really reignited our understanding that media can be a two-way conversation. It doesn't have to be us simply receiving something. We can also transmit. And I think that touches on what James was saying about media monarchy and suddenly understanding that he could actually, you know, interact with this medium rather than simply just take it in. So to me, it is reviving and retrieving an understanding of human interaction, but it's, of course, a different understanding, and not necessarily for the better, obviously, but it is something that an element of the culture that's being revived here.
Those were very salient points, and you obviously have done your homework. I would agree with them, and it just made me recall having learned exactly what you said through Neil Postman, the idea that TV's being phased out, radio's being phased out, newspapers were being phased out. Those weren't created in our human image. Those are created by corporations who are doing those things to get you to sit in front of the TV or listen to the radio to get advertising dollars for their soap operas, etc. So what we have is the breaking down of the status quo that was created by people for money, and the rising up of a new status quo in a form of alternative media that fills a need. It's created out of necessity because we see these things and we would feel irresponsible not trying to share and articulate these things with other people.
I would say too that actually, as long as we're still talking about, you know, the internet and what it's replaced or what it's made obsolete, then actually Roger Ebert, film critic, wrote sort of an argument that film is, you know, the best media because it contains every other form of media. So, James, I think you were touching on that, and that's what maybe now makes the computer and the net maybe the best media, because it contains all other media. So it hasn't necessarily made, you know, news, but perhaps newspapers obsolete. It's just pulling all of those things in together now. So too, if it enhances, you know, communication, instead of sitting in front of the TV, you know, I got to give it to things like Facebook, because I now know, you know, more of what's going on with, you know, my cousin Mikey in Chicago than I ever would, you know, if it wasn't there, because I probably wouldn't call him up out of the blue.
And in reference to what we're trying to do is apply our cognitive abilities to resolve situations that we see. There are solutions out there, and the problem is the solutions are not being communicated to the public because of this blind spot in corporate media where they like to censor things. And so what we're trying to do is to be able to communicate with people who are willing to listen. And so, to use a personal example, I started a podcast, right, after doing Project Constellation, and that got a lot of people who were listening to the audio. And then I started to make films, and that got a lot of people who like to sit and watch the videos. We put the magazine together because it would have text, audio, and video. But then we get feedback that some people don't like to spend more time in front of the computer than they have to. So then we went back to doing a podcast with films, with the magazine, and provide a community, because it's not just one form of media that's going to communicate that which we're trying to communicate. In fact, we need to employ all forms of media, combine them together, and give people as much access to this information that we have access to as we can.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That is, I hope, a tantalizing 10-minute chunk from my recent talk with Richard Grove of PeaceRevolution.org and TragedyAndHope.com and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Like I said, I have this posted up as interview with Richard Grove and James Corbett. James Corbett has this posted up as Signal to Noise, a three-way conversation on the media and the message, and I believe that it will be the forthcoming episode 4 of PeaceRevolution.org's podcast. So, my friends, we're going over the media monarchy outreach to try and connect with folks. And so we've discussed Clyde Lewis and Alex Ansary, Richard Grove, and James Corbett. So the last thing we're going to hit in the monarchy kingdom, and I believe there is a comment on this YouTube page that says, plug, plug, and plug. Which admittedly, yes. Just a little bit. The latest episode of The New World Next Week, with myself and James Corbett, our weekly 10-minute YouTube video series where we go over three main stories and break them down in a bite-sized way that is palatable to folks who may not listen to two-plus hour podcasts. The latest episode of The New World Next Week, which is our 19th, if you're keeping score, we go over all the things I've gone over in this last hour of Media Monarchy, episode 158, and that is the rise of the alternative media. So on this latest New World Next Week, we go over 2020 Hindsight, the new documentary from Paul Verge and PeaceRevolution.org, Signal to Noise, the conversation on the media and the message that we just heard from, Clyde Lewis, GroundZeroMedia.org, my first police state article, as well as my recent appearance on KUFO with Clyde and Alex. And the first bit we go over is something I played a clip from a couple of weeks ago on Media Monarchy that actually James Corbett sent to me, and that was the recent appearance of Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan on an interview show with Steve Jones, one of the founders of the Sex Pistols, on a site called IamRogue.com. We noted here, with a bit of exclaim, that the Sex Pistols and Smashing Pumpkins members discussed HARP, GM Foods, and the Illuminati. We also reference Billy Corgan's blog that throughout the Enviro Health catastrophes and the swine flu pandemic charted a lot of health truth. Everything from here to there.com. So from rock stars to the alternative media, the word is getting out about what's really going down on the latest episode of The New World Next Week.
And I don't write about this and I don't talk about this because I think celebrities are important or godlike or we should necessarily care about their pronouncements. But I do talk about this because, as I say in my article, these things are important if only because celebrities are a sort of bellwether, a sort of something that we can look to in our society as where is the general trend of society going? Because we know that a large mass of society is sort of looking to these celebrities as part of their pop culture memes and things to go by. So if celebrities start talking more and more about these types of things, and if this starts to end up in more forms of art, well, what does that say about our society and what type of discussion is taking place on a societal level that's being left out of the 6 o'clock news and things that are being thrust on us by the corporate media? So that's kind of my take on why this is important. But James, what do you think? What do you think about these pronouncements from various celebrities that we've seen increasingly over the years on these types of subjects?
It's sometimes dangerous. You can see situations such as the Dixie Chicks. If you speak out politically, you have people say, just shut up and sing. We don't care about your political beliefs. But I find it really, it's like you folks tailor their lives in so many ways after celebrities. But when the media says you should get mad at what, the Dixie Chicks said or what Charlie Sheen says or any of these folks, I find it fascinating. The interview with Steve Jones and Billy Corgan, I highly recommend it. It's amazing to see this kind of stuff, come around.
That's right. And also, I think for people who have followed Billy Corgan's work over the years, they know that he tends to be one of the more articulate rock stars. So it's interesting to hear this stuff discussed.
That, I believe, is maybe the first clip I've played in the 19 episodes of The New World Next Week that we've done. First time I've played a clip for you here on Media Monarchy, and I wanted to do that again because it falls in with the roundup here, the rise of the alternative media, and hopefully that will whet your appetite. And again, as Rich said in the clip prior, we want to try and make all kinds of different media covering many different topics to hit those things and to hit those folks that will perk up and be interested and receptive to that information. And again, we're all trying to learn it too. I'm no genius. We just are trying to work together. So, stay tuned next week for the 20th edition of The New World Next Week. And so, briefly, as we wrap up this first hour of episode 158 of MediaMonarchy.com, we're going to jump to the latest other media from CorbettReport.com. The latest episode of his podcast, 117, is called Requiem for the Suicided, Gary Webb. On episode 117, we meet the man who knew the secrets of the CIA's Dark Alliance. From the jungles of Nicaragua to the mean streets of South Central L.A., Gary Webb's groundbreaking journalism uncovered a scandal so huge that the story could not be allowed to continue. Help us honor the memory of this intrepid reporter by exploring the suspicious death and passing on the life's work of Gary Webb. Now, recently, James Corbett has started to do a Sunday update video to go along with the publication of each new episode on Sunday here in the States. The latest episode of that, Naked Lies, Blame the Banksters, and No More National Animal Identification System. He, of course, also has interviews coming out at a constant rate. Recent interviews with Jerome Ravitz, J. Michael Springman, and Bill Bullard on a number of subjects. Bill Bullard talking about NAIS, the National Animal Identification System. J. Michael Springman talking about the shady world of protected terrorists. He working at a visa office in Jeddah pre-9/11 and saw the way that a lot of these guys were shepherded around. The last note is, CorbettReport.com also has another entry in the Economics 101 series to go along and, again, to help spread information about the new financial world order. This latest episode features Patrick Carmack, and they're talking about the Bank for International Settlements. So, my friends, I think I've said everything I can say. And perhaps you've heard some of those clips before. Perhaps you've listened to those entire episodes. If you haven't, I implore you to get them. If you enjoyed them,
I implore you to please help spread all of this everywhere. That's the message. And again, I referenced the 2020 Hindsight DVD and donations to some of those alternative media sites. More on that coming soon, following the publication of this episode 158. So what we're going to do before we shift into all the other mixed messages and murder and mayhem updates on MediaMonarchy.com is take a quick moment with Ben Folds 5. Ben Folds 5, One Angry Dwarf, and 200 Solemn Faces from their fantastic 97 record, Whatever and Ever, Amen. That gets us into hour number two of episode 158 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 19th, 2010, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. As always, this transmission originates from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. We're in southeast Portland, Oregon, and as I went outside just a little bit ago during a clip, see at least half a dozen jet streams, the military-industrial complex ramping up for the latest war of aggression based on deception. And again, as always, huge thanks. ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, PhantomRadio.org, StickAM.com/GroundZeroRadio, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and Radio23.org. I know you can't remember all that. It's all linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. So a fairly exhaustive overview of Media Monarchy's involvement in the rise of a grassroots alternative media in that first hour. Now we're going to shift and cover all the other news. Mixed messages, broken promises, and the cult rapture. Murder and mayhem, homegrown errorism, Joe Stack, Amy Bishop, and all the rest. First, watching the front lines of the drug war. The drug war persists despite the mixed messages and propaganda. You'll recall over the last year we've been covering the meme of the media getting high on legalization. Despite Obama promise, DEA raids still going on against medical pot growers. This from Raw Story, as well as the Denver Post. Last Thursday, February 11th, a Denver news station interviewed Chris Bartkowitz about his medical marijuana operation in the basement of his home. Bartkowitz, confident of his compliance with state laws, boasted of its size and profitability. "I'm definitely living the dream now," he told 9 News, cited by the Denver Post. The following day, the dream was over. Drug enforcement agents raided his home, placed him under arrest, and carried off dozens of black bags of marijuana plants and growing lights. The Obama administration promised in October that the federal government would respect state laws allowing the growing and selling of marijuana for medicinal use, but the Drug Enforcement Agency sent a loud message with the arrest of Chris Bartkowitz. Like I said, more on this story from Raw Story and the Denver Post. And again, with the flashbacks, we have covered this meme on Media Monarchy. Just recently, the op-ed from independent.co.uk, U.S. waves white flag in disastrous war on drugs. A note from my backyard. If you recall, back in November, we covered the self-proclaimed, yet arguable, but still positive, first U.S. marijuana cafe opened in Portland, Oregon. And all the other media memes on legalizing and taxing marijuana. We have that full article from Raw Story about Chris Bartkowitz's bust in Denver. And I'll say it again, and I believe I referenced this last week, that I've been experimenting on MediaMonarchy.com as well as the sister sites with using the click here to see complete post, so that basically I can post massively long stories that won't blow up my front page on MediaMonarchy.com. So just be sure when you're landing on posts or when you're scrolling down the page that you're getting the full story. That's where I'm going to add all the videos and all the updates and all the contextual supplemental information, such as this
from allgov.com. CBS bans marijuana legalization ad in Times Square. In another move demonstrating a rightward tilt in its advertising choices, CBS has rejected a video billboard ad for Times Square that advocated for the legalization of marijuana. The Normal Foundation, part of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, wanted to run its 15-second commercial asserting that the nation could generate billions of dollars in tax revenue by legalizing and regulating the sale of marijuana. Normal wanted to air the ad 18 times a day starting on February 1st on CBS's 42nd Street digital billboard, but the network refused, according to CBS partner Neutron Media. Normal was informed by Neutron Media that CBS would not approve the ad. If CBS changes their morals, we will let you know, read Neutron's email to Normal. The decision not to accept the pro-marijuana commercial follows CBS's rejection of a television spot during the Super Bowl promoting a gay online dating website. But the network was willing to broadcast an anti-abortion commercial featuring college quarterback Tim Tebow and his mother. The little 16-second ad from Normal is linked up. It's silent. It's just a little graphic that basically shows you that, yes, money can grow on trees. So that's not necessarily that the Obama sign is breaking the promise of not busting legal medicinal marijuana operations in the more than a dozen states in the country. Although he could come out more forcefully in light of this latest Denver bust. He's probably not going to do that. Not going to do any of that stuff you thought he was going to do. He's not going to repeal the Patriot Act or stop the wars. We're only expanding all of it to a sickening degree. And as we said, the silence is deafening. It all plays into the carefully crafted and infiltrated, misdirected straw men media, WWF. We try not to listen to what they say. We want to see what they do, and we are seeing it. We're a year plus in to the Obamasiah and the criminal cabinet, and again, folks, not too much seems to change. Obama breaks yet another key campaign promise. This from Paul Joseph Watson. In the face of rapidly growing populist anger, that written pre-Joseph Stack crashing an airplane into an Austin IRS building, this posted this past Monday, February 15th, beginning again. In the face of rapidly growing populist anger, the Obama administration has signaled that it will fall back on a form of power well known to all successful dictators, rule by decree. And that Obama will use the very instrument he campaigned against to ram through more of the New World Order agenda. Those are executive orders, and lots of them. With much of his legislative agenda stalled in Congress, President Obama and his team are preparing an array of actions using his executive power to advance energy, environmental, fiscal, and other domestic policy priorities, reports the New York Times. Despite the fact that Obama campaigned on the platform of eliminating abuse of executive powers, which occurred under the previous puppet Bush, Obamasiah is on course to pass more executive orders than Bush did during his 8 years in the White House. Would you like a little reminder? Let's jump back to the campaign trail.
When Congress offers you a bill, do you promise not to use presidential signage to get your way?
Yes. Let me just explain for those who are unfamiliar with this issue. We've got a government designed by the founders so that there'd be checks and balances. You don't want a president who's too powerful, or a Congress who's too powerful, or a court who's too powerful. Everybody's got their own role. Congress's job is to pass legislation. The president can veto it, or he can sign it. But what George Bush has been trying to do as part of his effort to accumulate more power in the presidency is he's been saying, well, I can basically change what Congress passed by attaching a letter saying, I don't agree with this part or I don't agree with that part. I'm going to choose to interpret it this way or that way. That's not part of his power. But this is part of the whole theory of George Bush, that he can make laws as he's going along. I disagree with that. I taught the Constitution for 10 years. I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States. We're not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress. All right?
That was then, and this, of course, is the horrifying now. You can do more research on this topic with links to 1461days.blogspot.com for a current list of President Obama's moves. The aforementioned New York Times, thenewamerican.com. This, of course, ties into some of the recent moves. Just going back last month, Obama expands federal power over states with executive order. That would be the one creating the Council of Governors, where 10 hand-picked governors will reside over the regions in what is increasingly looking like some sort of North American community. And then just back to December, Obama grants Interpol immunity as foreign assets assigned to the homeland. And now we've got some of the other Obama-Saya updates. Again, we're nonpartisan here. We lump all these critters pretty much together. Cheney criticizes Obama on national security policy, and Biden fires back. That's from the Washington Post. It's easy to say, oh yeah, we're sick of Dick Cheney. You had your time, get out of the way. But he keeps popping up to criticize Obama, and they're all soft on the war of terror. As if he's done anything to soften up the war of terror. It's only expanded. You get these guys up, again, it's posing like WWF. And then later, when some other catastrophe happens, you see them joining together for a relief fund and saying they're like family. As if the Cheneyaks and the Obama-Sias are really arguing about any fundamental differences in the war of terror. They're just little front men, cronies, middle management, arguing on the stage to distract us like the shadows on the wall of the cave. War criminal Cheney should be on trial and not parading around on TV. That's from newsjunkiepost.com. Truthout.org breaks it down quite well. Cheney admits to war crimes. Media yawns. Obama turns the other cheek. More on Cheney admitting to being a war criminal from Washington's blog. And again, this is while all these phonies and cronies are making their rounds on the Sunday corporate media talking head shows. We reference this, I believe, from the Washington Post. Obama surge going for more kills instead of captures. More on that from allgov.com. Fighting terrorists, Obama goes for the kill instead of the capture. Chris Floyd chronicles the annals of liberation, the Obama surge driving thousands from their home. Again, newsjunkiepost.com has new stuff from Chris Hedges on the U.S. government and its inverted totalitarianism. Chris Floyd and Chris Hedges being two of the preeminent new kind of empire critics, if you will. Is Biden's terror attack warning related to a possible assassination attempt on Obama? This is coming from InfoWars, and again, this all relates to Cheney and Biden and all those guys talking about attacks. Biden saying, I'm not worried about an Al-Qaeda attack. He's concerned about a lone individual. Quote, am I less worried about an attack? No, I'm worried. Am I less worried about a catastrophic event? Yes. Lone gunman indeed. And we will get to some suspicious activities of some lone gunmen in just a little bit. But on the B-side that we just did a little bit ago, 157B, we noted that Bill Maher said that most Americans aren't bright enough to really know what's going on. Also wrong. But then sometimes he seems kind of right, such as in this case where he points out that we don't really have a progressive party in this country. Pot Kettle Black, Hillary says Iran sponsors terrorism. A CNN poll says that 52% say Obama doesn't deserve re-election in 2012. The drums are beating for war with Iran. Daniel Pipe, Sarah Palin. All the folks out there saying attacking Iran is the only way to save Obama's presidency. The Prince of Peace Prize. We're seeing the growing memes of us against them. We're all poised to tear each other apart because we're still playing into the left-right game. Just when there's something real that seems to be rising up, and it's not affiliated with any main political ideology or strata or color of skin, we see movements getting misdirected, and that's exactly what's happening now with some of the alternative media and with a lot of the liberty movement and so-called Tea Party movement. Something I missed last week, Representative John Murtha died at the age of 77 after basically what appears to be some sort of medical malpractice. More on that from the Wall Street Journal. Senator Evan Bayh will not run again. Senator from Illinois, I believe. The Dems are jumping ship. We covered all the other recent guys, Dodd and the rest. The last note here ties in with what I was saying about the misdirection and infiltration. An article from Kurt Nimmo. Palin tells Tea Party to merge with Republican Borg Hive. And that is exactly what we've been seeing. If I look on the front of Google News right now, they've got an article from MinistryValues.com. And it says, Ron Paul is back. Sarah Palin throws him a lifeline. And there you have it. Our next posting on MediaMonarchy.com segues quite well. I try and take the time in all the pre-production and the admittedly hard work that goes into producing MediaMonarchy.com on the web and on the air. I try and make this as easy to understand and always trying to keep in mind that perhaps there are new folks popping in at any given moment from anywhere in the world. And I don't want this to seem like an inside club where we're talking shop about things you don't understand. I sort through the news. I put it together in a context with the subtext of what we see playing out. Three main stories here published under Cult Rapture, which I took the name from a book by Adam Parfrey called Cult Rapture. Waiting for the end of the world. Our first story from allgov.com. Virginia legislature bans microchip implants as mark of the beast. Requiring individuals to have medical implants placed under their skin isn't just a potential violation of someone's civil rights, it's downright satanic. Republican Mark Cole, a member of Virginia's House of Delegates, is sponsoring legislation that would prevent employers or insurance companies from forcing people to get implants because he thinks the microchips could amount to the Antichrist's mark of the beast mentioned in the Bible. My understanding, I'm not a theologian, but there's a prophecy in the Bible that says you'll have to receive a mark, or you can neither buy nor sell things in the end times. Republican Mark Cole, member of Virginia's House of Delegates, told the Washington Post, some people think these computer chips might be that mark. Some of Cole's colleagues in the Virginia legislature have been left shaking their heads over the idea. Democrat Robert Brink compared the concern to the likelihood of asteroids striking the Earth or giant alligators roaming underground sewers. He also said that California's legislature passed a similar ban. And that alone was reason enough for Virginia to avoid doing the same thing. If Virginia's starting to use California as our legislative role model, it's a sign that our legislative apocalypse has arrived, Brink told the Freelance Star. Nevertheless, Mark Cole's bill was approved by the House of Delegates last week. With a link to the passage from state.va.us, more from fredericksburg.com, The Washington Post, and WSLS.com. We don't have time to get into the connections of all these things in predictive prophecy programming. Something that I saw a lot of growing up as a Southern Baptist kid. Talking about the rapture in the end times, which even as a kid, I couldn't help but think that if this is all meant to be and it's all written down, you guys are just going to follow it through and make it happen on purpose. And that's what we see. Many flashbacks relate to this, going all the way back to April 2006 on MediaMonarchy.com. Armageddon it. Then we got Armageddon time a year later. West Virginia offers licenses for those who fear the beast. That's from August of 2008. Farmers see mark of the beast in RFID livestock tags. That's from September 08. And if you recall the recent update from foodworldorder.com, the USDA out of nowhere has seemingly dropped the National Animal Identification System. The last flashback note here relating to explicitly end times revelation rapture. Teacher claims fingerprinting is mark of the beast. That's just going back to last November. You'll also recall on a previous recent episode, we covered the Polish priest who is using fingerprints to make sure all his young parishioners attend mass. And if you have perfect attendance, you can miss out on the test at the end. So some teachers saying it's a mark of the beast, other priests offering it as an incentive. Moving over to The Guardian, Americans stock up to be ready for the end of the world. Unlike the 1990s survivalists, preppers come from all backgrounds and live all over America. They're just as likely to be found in a suburb or downtown loft as a remote ranch in the mountains. Prepping networks, which have sprung up all over the country in the past few years, provide advice on how to prepare food reserves, how to grow crops in your garden, how to hunt, and how to defend yourself. There are prepping books, online shops, radio shows, countless blogs, prepping courses, and prepping conferences. John Melandrid runs a website called PioneerLiving.net, which is one of the main forums for discussing prepping. It provides a range of advice for those who just want to store extra food in case of a power cut, to those who want to embrace the off-the-grid lifestyle of America's Western pioneers. We get inquiries from all walks of life. We had a principal from a high school asking us to talk to their children. We have doctors and firemen and lawyers. The Guardian across the pond reporting on Americans stocking up to be ready for the end of the world. I remember on a recent Onion video unrelated to this topic, you know how well their videos are produced. They always have the little news crawler at the bottom. And one of them said, studies show more Americans preparing for zombie apocalypse than retirement. But another flashback, and it is on YouTube.com/Media Monarchy. In hard times, some flirt with survivalism. Our third and final story on this cult rapture, waiting for the end of the world posting
comes from businessweek.com, and I saw other folks that had posted it up said this is not The Onion. Caring for pets left behind by the rapture. Many people in the U.S., perhaps 20 to 40 million, believe there will be a second coming in their lifetimes, followed by the rapture. In this event, they say, the righteous will be spirited away to a better place while the godless remain on earth, left behind. But what will become of all the pets? Bart Center, 61, a retired retail executive in New Hampshire, says many people are troubled by this question and he wants to help. He started a service called Eternal Earthbound Pets that promises to rescue and care for animals left behind by the saved. Promoted on the web as the next best thing to pet salvation in a post-rapture world, the service has attracted more than 100 clients who pay $110 for a 10-year contract, $15 for each additional pet. If the rapture happens in that time, the pets left behind will have homes with atheists. Center has set up a national network of godless humans to carry out the mission. If you love your pets, I can't understand how you could not consider this. This post got a little bit of action as it goes up on my feed in facebook.com/mediamonarchy. One friend that I know is a fundamentalist Christian just said, interesting. And another one asked, what would they want to do with a chip? With a lot of question marks and exclamation points. So I just sent them a video breaking down IBM and the Holocaust, the fact that the camp numbers started off as IBM Hollerith punch card database numbers. IBM's connection with Verichip and implantable RFID chips. I'm not sure how all those things will play out. You have a massive amount of the population, whether it's fundamentalist Christians or Muslims or Hindus or any other religion, that are all waiting for the second coming. Now, what I didn't know growing up and what I learned later, and what I'm only recalling off the top of my head, but it's that this idea of a rapture of those who are saved Christians being spirited away at the blink of an eye while the rest of the world literally goes to hell is a relatively new idea. Only in the last hundred couple of years has that been put into Christianity. It's the sort of Deus ex machina, the get out of jail free. And you have a lot of folks I know and love, who when they look at the information and things that I present to them through MediaMonarchy.com, will ultimately say, it's in God's hands. This is all meant to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. It's all prophecy. It's all meant to be. Even if you believe that, I believe somewhere in that book, it also makes references to always fighting against evil and tyranny, no matter what. So I guess this just brings us back to what I guess has been a fundamental question in MediaMonarchy.com, and for a lot of folks as they start to dive into this information, is not only the why would they do that, but once you realize that they do, is it accidental or is it conspiratorial? Do they let it happen on purpose or do they make it happen on purpose? I don't have all the answers to all those questions, my friends, and we don't have time to go through all of that here. And what we're going to do with this last just under half hour on episode 158 of MediaMonarchy.com is go over again the rearing of the ugly head of the murder and the mayhem
the mass murder contagion that we track on MediaMonarchy.com that seems to spring up every time spring starts to sprung. All the things that cluster around April, of course, coming up. What seemed to be kicked off, seemingly, by the Christmas bomber, Mutilab, which over the last several weeks since Christmas, we've extensively covered on MediaMonarchy.com. We have shown that the Christmas bomber was shepherded and protected. Didn't have a visa, still got on the plane. Didn't. He was on the terrorist watch list. It's the same story again and again and again. They trumpet the bust to the high heavens, and then later it spills out that they knew who this guy was. They were watching him. Good folks at levels of the government tried to stop it, and they were told, we know that this guy looks like a terrorist, but we're already watching him. Let him go through, because this is part of an operation. As if they're going to use them to connect to who the terrorists really are. The liquid bomber story has been completely debunked, yet we still dump out our water at the airports. The shoe bomber, we all have to take off our shoes. The Christmas bomber now fully brings in the naked body scanners, which have been proven to not really find explosives. I believe people have written articles about faking it with a fake breast implant. I believe they had a breast removed due to cancer. And of course, Chertoff and all the creepy characters are all connected to profiting off of this. That's another fundamental key point. They who cause the problems pose as our saviors and reap a profit, as well as more power and more control. Problem, reaction, solution. So since the Christmas Day bomber, we've seen a huge increase in the growing and expanding and morphing war of terror. And as we've said, when the Dems are in, it seems to come back to the homeland. You recall, I believe Bill Clinton wanted to pass something that had a similar name even in the 90s, but he hadn't had, of course, his catalyzing catastrophic event with Oklahoma City yet. And it was something like the Heartland, blah, blah, blah. Again, they have the legislation. They're waiting for it. Do they let it happen on purpose, or do they make it happen on purpose? Either way, they use what is, again, euphemistically referred to as the shock doctrine to capitalize, literally, on the chaos they create. The two most recent examples of this murder and mayhem, or as I've coined, homegrown errorism, the twisted tales of Joe Stack and Amy Bishop. Now, as you'll recall from the first hour of this episode, I've been very busy doing other shows and interviews and video pieces, just spreading the word in the information war. And I knew about the Amy Bishop story. And then we had the Joe Stack situation happen. Essentially, I haven't gone over all of the information, but I think I've put together a good contextual post for you here, subtextual, to let you know what's going down on these latest, what seem to be engineered events, false flag events, with intelligence connections, a laundry list of suspicious activity. So the Joe Stack story and Amy Bishop still developing, and too much to go into fully. Fortunately, and predictably, fantastically well, Cryptogon.com and LegitGov.org have the great archives with all the updates connected to all the sinister developments concerning Joe Stack and Amy Bishop. So, let's just give the thumbnail sketch for these latest operations. last Friday, February 12th, as I was here doing the show for you, I believe I referenced, which was breaking on Google News at the time, was that a professor killed three people at the University of Alabama. The Boston Globe has several good reports on this story, and those are all linked up as well, copycat effect. But from the Boston Globe, alleged Alabama killer was suspect in attempted bombing of Harvard professor in 1993, and she also murdered her brother in 1986. Reading, the professor who is accused of killing three colleagues at the University of Alabama on Friday, February 12th, was the main suspect in the attempted mail bombing of a Harvard medical school professor and a Massachusetts police chief revealed last Saturday, February 13th, that Amy Bishop had fatally shot her brother in 1986. After her arrest in this most recent killing spree at the University of Alabama, there was a search of Amy Bishop's computer, and authorities found a draft of a novel that Bishop was writing about a female scientist who had killed her brother and was hoping to make amends by becoming a great scientist. This, according to a person who was briefed on the investigation and spoke to the Boston Globe on the condition of anonymity. We're going to jump to Cryptogon.com, and I'm just going to run through some of the quick, sinister oddities and connections on the curious case of Amy Bishop.
Didn't happen. Amy Bishop, the University of Alabama in Huntsville professor accused of killing three colleagues during a faculty meeting Friday, had a violent episode in her distant past. That's according to authorities. Police say she shot and killed her brother in their home in Massachusetts more than 20 years ago. Police originally recorded the shooting as an accident, although they now say the records of the incident are missing. Bishop had been denied tenure at the University of Alabama in Huntsville, and officials say she was scheduled to finish her teaching duties there at the end of the semester. She's been charged with capital murder, but authorities are still investigating.
We are currently looking at the facts of the case. We're considering further charges, such as attempted murder charges. It's still early in the stage.
Authorities have refused to talk about a motive, and a school spokesman says the faculty meeting where the shooting happened was not held to talk about any matters about tenure. The school's director of public safety says law enforcement moved quickly as soon as the shooting happened.
Well, we had officers responding, trying to assess exactly what was going on. Things were happening very rapidly, had a suspect in custody very quickly, and that, you know, kept it to that building and those circumstances and eliminated threat.
Descriptions of Bishop from students and colleagues were mixed. Some saw a strange woman who had difficulty relating to her students, while others described her as witty and intelligent. Three faculty members were killed in Friday's shooting, and three of Bishop's colleagues were injured, two critically. Carlotta Bradley, The Associated Press.
So that's just one brief clip, just giving you the brief thumbnail sketch, the mainstream media take on Dr. Amy Bishop. But yes, let's jump over to Cryptogon.com with his massive headline and massive article, Harvard-educated neurobiologist and co-inventor of a revolutionary medical research device involved with mass shooting? We've got updates from the Boston Globe, Amazon Fever, tying in with this supposed novel, Martians in Belfast. Amy Bishop's lawyer says she has no memory of shooting. If you recall, if you caught it at the very beginning of that clip, you heard her say, it didn't happen. They're still alive. No memory of the shooting. That sounds like Sirhan Sirhan. From the Huntsville Times, Amy Bishop convicted of assault in 2002. From the Boston Globe, Amy Bishop held shotgun on police after killing brother. Amy Bishop wrote a novel, quote, about a virus that made all women barren and ended mankind, and other novels about the IRA. Domestic terror group. Here we have the weapon being unregistered. CBS News saying the gun she's accused of using in the shooting wasn't registered, and investigators don't know how or where she got it. The husband said, We went to a shooting range recently, but I don't know where she got the gun. Bishop's mom worked at the local police department at the time of the shooting of her brother in 86. That's from the New York Post. And again, the Boston Globe, husband didn't know where she got the gun used for target practice. Was she a far-left political extremist obsessed with Obama? Family didn't own a gun. Husband baffled about where she may have gotten the gun. Scrolling down the massive update list. There are bizarre confrontations at IHOP restaurants. Again, the bombing, the attempted bombing of a Harvard professor. AL.com, Alabama. Again, this is where the most recent event happened. AL.com reports that Amy Bishop ditched the weapon in the bathroom, then called her husband for a ride. There's more on the victims from the New York Times. This, of course, ties in with the memes of the dead microbiologist and now missing and dead nuclear scientists and neurobiologists. What's going on in the labs? This also ties in with strange University of Alabama space experiments with Amy Bishop's husband connected to Cherokee Lab Systems. Google Cache showing that Amy Bishop's lab was developing a neural computer. But the media story is that Amy Bishop did this because she didn't get tenure. Hopefully, just some of the things I read to you there will show you that, as per usual, there's more going on than meets the eye. Now, the story of Joe Stack and another plane crashing into a building just happened yesterday, February 18th. So all this dirt is slowly surfacing, such as the prior warnings link, a source I believe exclusive to InfoWars, says that the FBI office in Austin knew the attack was coming. There are rumored to be memos. The hazmat team happened to be in place before the crash, as we'll hear an eyewitness testify to. And now, surely as we said, this is all now going to be connected to Tea Party paranoia and homegrown errorism. And again, Lori Price and Citizens for Legitimate Government on legitgov.org has the amazing Austin, Texas plane crash oddities page. But let's just get the quick rundown. From the Associated Press, man angry at IRS crashes plane into building. A software engineer furious with the Internal Revenue Service launched a suicide attack on the agency Thursday by crashing his small plane into an office building containing nearly 200 IRS employees, setting off a raging fire that sent workers running for their lives. The FBI tentatively at the time identified the pilot as A. Joseph Stack III, 53. I've also heard him and seen him listed as Joseph Andrew Stack III. Law enforcement officials, speaking on condition of anonymity because the investigation was still going on, said that before taking off, Stack apparently set fire to his house and posted a long anti-government screed on the web. It was dated Thursday and signed Joe Stack, 1956-2010. In it, the author cited run-ins he's had with the IRS and ranted about the tax agency, government bailouts, and corporate America's thugs and plunderers. I've had all I can stand. I choose not to keep looking over my shoulder at Big Brother while he strips my carcass. I've collected up some media from CNN, I believe, and Russia Today to give you the quick rundown on the other strange case of Joseph Andrew Stack.
We are following breaking news out of Austin, Texas, where the pilot of a small plane slammed into a seven-story building. That building houses offices for the Internal Revenue Service and the CIA. Video from a traffic camera shows heavy smoke coming out. Investigators say the Cherokee 140 plane hit the building at 9:46 a.m. Central Time. The pilot has been identified as Joseph Andrew Stack. Two people were injured and a third remains unaccounted for. Federal officials say the IRS and CIA have offices in this very complex. It's the reason why F-16 jets scrambled to the scene. In a strange twist, Austin firefighters were called to Stack's home which he allegedly set on fire just before getting into that plane. Well, we have guests joining us to discuss this breaking news story. Chris Steierwald with the Washington Examiner is right here in our D.C. studio. And Fred Burton with Stratford, a leading global intelligence company, joins me live from Austin. Fred, I'm going to start with you. The suspected pilot in this case, Joseph Stack, was believed to have been on a suicide mission and angry at the government. So why aren't federal officials calling this a terrorist act?
It really doesn't fit the criteria for that from the Department of Justice guidelines or the FBI for the lead as an actual act of terrorism. Now, the interesting thing would be whether or not he's associated with any of the anti-government groups or the anti-tax groups. And we do have quite a few of those here in Texas. For example, the Republic of Texas, as well as the Posse Comitatus.
Let me bring in another expert, Lou Palumbo. Lou, I'm reading from this one of the guys on my staff, Dave Johnson, came up with this suicide note. And then the folks behind me here at CNN were able to nail it down. Listen to these guys' words, and then you tell me what you think. There's a storm raging in my head. Desperate times call for desperate measures. Remember, one of these was no taxation without representation. Then we were further brainwashed to believe that there is any kind of freedom in this place. It rants somewhat. It's very specific. It's very anti-government, not particular to one ideology or the other. And it seems to be very much aimed at the IRS. Concludes with, well, Mr. Big Brother IRS man, let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well. This was a guy on a mission, wasn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think this was an individual that apparently had a severe level of emotional dysfunction. Rick, very seldom do I contradict things that you speak to or your points of view, but you know, I don't think we should automatically eliminate this as being a domestic terrorism act, because perhaps many of the characteristics that are attached to this act are similar to those with McVeigh and the Murrow building in Oklahoma City. You know, disdain for the government, distrust. I believe that McVeigh was also a little emotionally distressed as well, and I think that it's just a bit premature, and there must be an agenda behind not wanting to attach the word terrorism to it, but I don't quite see how people are taking that position at this crossroad.
Well, you're right, and you know, we as a television network choose to not be alarmist. We are very careful about the use of our words. I don't think we're saying that there isn't a possibility that this might turn into terrorism at some point. I just am a little careful to just throw that word out.
Did you actually see the plane flying across 183? How low would you estimate that plane was?
I don't know. Well, like I said, when it was back there, which is what, half a mile something, it was already, like, we were worried it was going to hit the trees over there. So, I mean, it was already coming in way too low. So whatever was going on, it didn't get out of it.
So maybe 20, 30 feet above the ground? What do you think?
I'd say more. I saw it at least. It was probably about 50.
Okay.
But...
Is there anything else that you would like to say seeing this morning?
I guess, the one thing I would like to say is that I know the fire department got here real fast because they actually had an engine sitting over there that just happened to be doing something with hazmat. So they were over here like right away.
Wow.
So I guess that's the one good thing.
Yeah. Well, Megan, thank you so much again. It's always great to have an eyewitness account, and unfortunately on a morning like this, but we thank you for your perspective this morning. Thank you, Megan.
So it's interesting, the last thing that she wanted to note is that the hazmat crew was already in place. And they referenced in the prior clip Timothy McVeigh, and of course we knew that the SWAT team and the BATF were positioned before Oklahoma City. As a brief sidebar, that just kind of reminded me that I recently watched the film Bug, which was directed by Exorcist director William Friedkin, based on the play by Tracy Letts, which I did see on stage, that ties in with paranoia and planting microchips and Timothy McVeigh and homegrown errorism. Some more murder and mayhem memes. Three Tesla Motors employees killed in a plane crash. More on that from LA Times. A plane from Denver's International Airport, or the New World Airport, diverted after a threatening letter found. More on that from NationalTerrorAlert.com. Returning to Cryptagon, following other dead scientists. Again, just Google dead microbiologists, but in this case, two nuclear physicists dead and one missing since December 09. This seems to recall the idea that gangsters will sometimes off some of their own guys if the mask is starting to slip, and the heist and the schemes and the lies and the crimes are threatening to be exposed, you kill the people who either willingly or unwittingly know something or are involved in these operations. Guru indicted in three deaths at Arizona Sweat Lodge. If you recall, that happened late last year. And our last clip on this episode is a disturbing one and kind of remarkable. Going to Raw Replay. This happened on a BBC One documentary where the host of this documentary, Ray Gosling, made this rather startling admission.
And maybe this is the time to share a secret that I've kept for quite a long time. I killed someone once. Not in this region, not in our East Midlands, but not so far away. He was a young chap. He'd been my lover. And he got AIDS. And in a hospital one hot afternoon, doctors said, there's nothing we can do. And he was in terrible, terrible pain. I said to the doctor, don't leave me, just for a bit. And he went away. And I picked up the pillow. I smothered him until he was dead. The doctor came back. I said, he's gone. Nothing more was ever said.
BBC host admits on air to killing lover. This story, again by way of NationalTerrorAlert.com, is now just starting to blow up and gain traction again in the new climate of the mass murder contagion, with Joe Stack and Amy Bishop and the Christmas bomber and all of that. Alleged attempt by Fort Jackson soldiers to poison food. I believe we also learned that they were Muslim. And just early this morning, this Friday, February 19th, 2010, student wounded in Northern Illinois University shooting, a suspect in custody. More on that from the Washington Post. And lastly, by way of UK Reuters, Saudi prince in court over London murder. Murder and mayhem indeed, my friends. And if we just glance back to Google News right now, asking the question, is Joe Stack and the IRS crash crime or terrorism? As we have seen over these last nearly 10 years, the powers that be have turned all crime into terrorism. Really disturbing things are happening at an alarmingly fast rate, my friends. I just hope that you're paying attention and talking about these things and spreading the word about these things. And that's what I try and do with MediaMonarchy.com. Again, as I told you back in the first hour, as we were covering the rise of the alternative media and the Media Monarchy outreach, I pledge to you that I'm going to go set up a bank account dedicated to being able to take donations to MediaMonarchy.com. One, to help pay for the domains, and two, to help distribute the new documentary from PeaceRevolution.org, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. So again, I reiterate a huge thanks to all those folks connected to the outreach and helping spread the word about all of these things. Ground Zero, Outside the Box, Peace Revolution, New World Next Week, Corbett Report, all the folks who help spread the word. As we like to close out these shows, we like to listen, or rather list, while you listen, to some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I take a look at who hits the sites and see where they're coming from. It can sometimes give you an extra clue as to what stories are big and what the spooks are looking at. Northcom.mil out of Colorado Springs, Colorado visited. They hit me up from someone's reposting of my story about the cyber shockwave drill, USPostToday.com, and that's where the DOD came from. Royal Canadian Mounted Police out of Ottawa U.S. House of Representatives out of Washington, D.C., googled Cyber Shockwave TV. Dow Jones out of Piscataway, New Jersey, googled Cyber Shockwave. The DEA out of Arlington visited, again, the DOD Network Information Center, this time out of Columbus, Ohio. Hit us up from the spook's favorite, blacklistednews.com. Deutsche Bank out of New York googled Cyber Shockwave broadcast. The Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola. The Belvoir.army.mil out of Woodbridge, Virginia, googled Northcom Vigilant 2009. And lastly, out of San Diego, the Navy Network Information Center. Those are just some of the creepy customers visiting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Again, my friends, I can't repeat it enough. You got to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.